Happy Hump Day, and welcome to the Sexual Healing Podcast. If this is your first time joining us, welcome in. If you are a returning listener, welcome back, and we appreciate your support. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Pookie, and always at my side, my partner in crime in the podcasting world.
Yes, I am Dark Boy.
Hello, Dark Boy. Now, you know,
yeah.
I didn't really say what the show is about, did I? Okay.
That's okay.
The struggle. You can say it now. Well, you know, I am still not back in my home yet, and it has been 5 weeks. And yeah, so although when I was over there last time, they were rebuilding the kitchen cabinets. So there is that. But the bathroom is still
progress.
Yeah, the bathroom still had no floor, and the toilet was still in the bathtub. So hey, it's like, and there was nowhere to put the sink in the bathroom other than the floor. So there's work still. So this is the Sexual Healing Podcast from top to bottom, where Dark Boy and I talk about life and its various issues, dramas, traumas, triumphs, and overcomings. From our perspective as two black gay men in our 40s, one of us is now in the latter half of our 40s. The other is sitting about to roll up on the middle.
In the mid.
Yes. Yeah. About to roll right up on that middle of the 40s.
Well, I'm exactly in the middle.
Are you? Well, okay, fine.
Well, 45.
Okay. We gave you 45, but you're not that 45, yeah. Though.
No,
not that one. But we have lived a little bit. Our parents would say we're still babies, but hey, we've lived a little something. We have stories to tell, advice to share, and we figure why not share it in this format. So here we are, and maybe, just maybe, you may not make some of the mistakes that we did, but hey, what is life but an opportunity to make mistakes? So, how are you doing this week, Dark Boy? Are there any candidates for the slap-a-hole list?
Not this week.
Damn.
Not this week.
Okay.
Well, it's weird. I had one last week and you didn't, so.
I didn't. No. I mean, I didn't know her, but it was Crosswalk Kathy. But otherwise, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, well. I didn't have anybody.
But then, we both would have one every day if you're going by that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's always some delicate flower out there just itching to get slapped up. But I'm going to behave and be a gentleman about it. But so you had a good week? We're good enough?
Yep.
Okay.
Everything, yep. Good week.
All right. Yeah, for me, it was a pretty good week. I am in the midst of National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo.
Okay, yes.
And I have reached about 20,000 words at this point for the month.
Out of 50?
Out of 50,000, yeah. That's the
goal? Okay.
You know, if you're unfamiliar with NaNoWriMo, it's an annual event where people from all over the globe sign up on NaNoWriMo.org, and you basically talk about what your project is, and you can put your text in there for them to count your words. But the goal is for all of us to write at least 50,000 words in the month of November, because somewhere in those words there is a novel residing. If you've seen the movie Crazy Rich Asians, the guy that wrote the book that's based on, he wrote it during NaNoWriMo, or he rewrote it, finished it. You know, he had the guts of a book, and you know, an agent happened to come across it and said, hey, can you get this done in a month? And he said, sure. He wasn't convinced, but he wrote like over 100,000 words in that month. And in there was his novel, which has become a motion picture. And I believe he now is retired from whatever he was doing before that.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure the option alone for the rights to make the movie. And I think he's still got a producer credit. So he is all set. I believe his name is Kevin Wang. So yeah, okay. He did his work during NaNoWriMo, and it's not to say that I'm going to pull a Kevin on this, but I would not object to pulling a Kevin. But in the meantime, I am continuing on in my book. And aside from a couple of people in some places I have attempted to write that have decided to have very loud phone conversations, no candidates for slappage this week.
Okay.
I happen to be sitting next to this really obnoxious, I guess he was like an attorney or something like that. And I was just like, get your ass out of Starbucks and go to work. And another one was this realtor, and she seemed like she was rather unscrupulous. So, yeah, they were a little loud and a little abrasive and just getting on my nerves while I was trying to write. And noise-canceling earbuds can only do so much. So, yeah. So they were my candidates for slappage this week.
Okay.
Yeah, but otherwise, doing all right. So I guess we should move forward because we always have the goal of getting the show done in an hour or less, and
around an hour. I think we're around an hour now.
Yeah, we're actually, since we have basically cut the content in half, we are coming in at about an hour and change typically. So
yeah,
we are very proud of ourselves. And you know, we'll investigate the rest of it. But this week, it is my turn to present a blacklist. So the blacklist, for those of you new to our scene, is a list, top three of sometimes our favorite things or our least favorite things. These things tend to be black, so they could be people, places, or things. And this week, I thought I would share a list of three black gay writers that you might be sleeping on. So they're in no particular order. But the first one is a brother by the name of Aaron Anson. And he recently published a memoir called Mind Your Own Life: The Journey Back.
I like that name.
Yeah, that's a great title. So it's The Journey Back to Love. And it's basically his memoir about growing up black, gay, and in the southeastern states of the U.S., so the old South, and just how he came through that experience growing up in a church and ultimately finding himself and liking who he found and falling in love with that person. So that's, you know, he's someone that you might be sleeping on, so give him a run on Amazon. And his name is spelled Aaron, so it's A-A-R-O-N. The last name is Anson, A-N-S-O-N. And once again, the name of that book is Mind Your Own Life: The Journey Back to Love. And he's actually featured on a list of 35 queer black writers you need to know about. So we will put that link of that list of writers in the show notes. It's a very nice list of past and present writers out there, you know, Harlem Renaissance folk, all the way up to James Earl Hardy, Elin Harris, and company, but also some of the guys of the newer Renaissance. And speaking of that more recent Renaissance of black gay lit, I had a twofer here, brothers Essex Hemphill and brother Joseph Beam. These two were the first black gay authors that I read that were like explicitly that. I mean, I'd read Baldwin before them, but my freshman year in college, I got the book Brother to Brother, which was started by Joseph Beam and finished by Essex Hemphill, because Joseph died while he was working on that work. And it was an anthology of essays, poetry, prose by black gay men, just on a range of topics, which is really about being black gay men and what is, you know, what are their lives about and what matters and what's the community. And it was just a life-changing book for me. And so Joseph Beam, I would have loved to have been able to see him read his own stuff, but he was already gone before I even knew he existed. And Essex Hemphill died, I believe, in the early mid-90s, perhaps.
Okay. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know when.
He's a very powerful poet. I love his poem, Does Your Mama Know About Me? I love that one.
Oh, that's another good title.
Yeah, you know, he had a collection of poems called Ceremonies, and just like brothers like him and Asado Saint, Melvin Dixon is someone I could have easily mentioned, Larry Duplichan, just phenomenal writers out there that are telling our stories. And the third guy I will mention is someone who probably you've not heard of at all. He's written two books that I'm aware of, and I own both. One is called, the author is Michelangelo Scruggs.
Okay, no.
And one of his, the first one I read from him was called Blood Thicker Than Water. You talk about high drama. Just, I must have read that book in 3 hours. It was just, I could not put it down. Ooh. You know, it was about a...
Maybe that should be made into a movie.
Yeah. I mean, it would probably be accused of being melodramatic, but hey, that's, you know...
That's okay.
It was riveting. I mean, it was about a brother and sister and... and really their relationship evolving over the years, and the brother was gay, and the sister, you know, she was a somewhat devout Christian woman, if I remember. It's been at least 10 years since I've read this book. I need to pick it up again and read it. It was so good. And then he had another book called The Men's Room, which was about a young man who was sexually assaulted by an older man in the bathroom years prior. And then he encounters this man in it later in his life. And it's all about what happens when those two are in one another's lives once again. And, you know, can you outrun the law? And can you recover from trauma that's been... And it's just, it was the premise of it was just quite intriguing. And I remember I purchased it and he basically was like, okay, so this book was not supposed to be for sale, but I will send you one from my private stash. And I was like, oh, thank you, because I love your stuff. So I just remember like getting that note from him with the book, like, okay, this was not supposed to be for sale, but it's out of print. I'll give you one of mine. I said, thank you. And I read it in like, you know, again, half a day. I was just sitting there like, ooh, you know. So Michelangelo, I don't think he's writing anymore. I haven't seen anything, but I haven't like really stalked a brother and looked. But really good writer. He can give you drama. Oh, he does drama well. So yeah. So that is my blacklist.
Yes.
Four brothers that you might be sleeping on, and they're really interesting work. So yeah.
Okay, very good. Okay. Send that list out so we could look at the other ones too, though.
Yes, I will put that in the show notes.
Okay.
Which now has a featured spot on each episode's page on our website, www.sexualhealingpod.com. So check that out. New facelift. There's a new... That face has been snatched on that girl. She looks good now. Yeah, so this week... In our 34th episode, well, actually, it's our 35th because we had that Weekend in Wakanda episode, which was episode 1.5. Yes. We are going to continue our talk about sexual health. And in particular, we're looking at how can you partner with your physician or your primary care provider to really, you know, to really improve or maintain your sexual health. And the interesting thing is we came across this guide. I'm attempting to pull it up. My device is being very...
shady right now.
Yeah, it's being shady, fussy. I don't know what's wrong with this thing, but it's acting a damn fool. Okay, so it is called, For Men Only, Your Sexual
Your
Health.
Your Sexual Health, yep.
Yeah, and it's a collaborative effort between the National Alliance on State and Territorial AIDS Directors and the National Coalition of STD Directors.
Okay.
And it's a really interesting guide that we just happened to come across while we were searching for things on just sexual health and how best to talk with your doctor. And so this guy talks about the different resources. And we'll put the document itself in the show notes, a link to it. But it talks about how to choose your doctor and some questions to ask. Talks about safer sex and different STD symptoms. And it talks about vaccinations and has a short section on the end about PrEP. Because I believe this came out in the early days of prep. So we thought we'd walk through this document. It's about 8 pages of material and a downloadable PDF. And the first section was choosing your doctor. So I thought, if you're okay with this dark boy, I might interview you a little bit. Is that all right?
Sure. Okay. Although I don't know how much I'll have, but...
Okay. Well, I mean, this is just about choosing your doctor. So, you know, it's difficult. I think for us as Black men in general, it can be, we have a love-hate relationship with our medical providers. We'd rather not go, by and large. I tend to not have a problem going to the doctor, but I know a lot of brothers do. And and so...
There's that trust issue, I think.
Yeah, well, we have good reason, you know, with just with Tuskegee and some other things.
Yep, that's history. Just going to say Tuskegee.
Yeah, that's a big one. And they did brothers dirty in that one and made sisters complicit in that, too. So there's a lot of mistrust. There's also just this whole idea of the tough guy thing that we're supposed to adopt, where we don't go to the doctor, or, you know, we don't go to therapy because we're not supposed to talk about our problems because we're not supposed to have them. And if we do have them, we crush them with our mighty masculinity and we move on because we don't, you know, we don't hurt and we're not vulnerable. And all that,
makes
of course.
You think back to our episode of toxic masculinity.
Basically, yeah.
A little bit of that in there.
Mm-hmm. And that is why men die quicker. It's like, I think that's one of the reasons we have a shorter life expectancy.
Well, part of the reason.
Well, one of the reasons, yeah. I think it's definitely, you know, if we do have stuff wrong with us, it tends to be caught later. And so, and we, you know, we could certainly talk about sexism in medicine because women really get treated, you know, poorly by a lot of doctors, particularly our Black women. And it's even worse with our trans siblings as well, because most doctors do not understand that. And imagine being someone who presents physically as male, but you're sitting in the waiting room at the gynecologist, because if you're a trans man and you've not had bottom surgery, you still got some stuff down there that only a gynecologist knows what to do with.
That's true.
You know, so it gets real sticky. And, you know, I think maybe we'll have an episode at some point where we do talk about trans health issues, but I definitely want to get a trans person for that. And I think you would agree as well, because it's all speculation for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't really know. But the trans friends that I have, I just know that it is an issue. It's important. So... Yeah, so I think getting back to our main point, we wanted to just kind of walk through this guide and talk about some key questions you need to ask in evaluating and choosing a doctor. So you have to figure out if you and your doctor are a good match. So the first thing you want to ask yourself during an appointment with your doctor is, do you feel judgment from your doctor because of your race, ethnicity, or sexual behaviors? And so I would ask you that question, Dark Boy. Have you ever felt any judgment from your provider?
No. I think of all of my doctors, I'm just trying to think back through all the years. I think there was only, they've all been people of color.
Oh, wow.
So either Latino, Latina, my current one is an Asian man. I know my, back when I was much younger, you know, a kid. Mm-hmm. It was a woman from, I'm assuming, I don't know, from India or Sri Lanka. So, I mean, they've all been people of color, except for the one. And now the one white guy that I, that was my doctor, I saw him for a very short period of time. I was referred to him by a mutual friend of ours. That was his doctor. And he said, why don't you try going here? So I went there, and then maybe 8 months after I started seeing him, he retired. And so my current doctor, which is an Asian guy, he took over, and so I've been seeing him since. So he's, you know, I don't feel judged. I did tell him that I'm gay, but it actually, and married, and it's never come up.
Okay.
I mean, good or bad, it's never come up.
Okay. Yeah, I know my last two doctors have been very forthright in asking about sexual orientation. I just remember my previous doctor, whom I'd worked with for a good 15 years, in my first visit with her, she was like, okay, are you heterosexual, bisexual, homosexual? And I was like, homo? And she's like, okay. So, well, regardless,
were you hesitant when you said that?
Yeah, it was so matter of fact. It was just a bit disarming. And I was like, homo? You know, and then I was also like, oh, okay, I guess I'm out. Right. But, you know, you're always like, am I out in this situation? I don't know. And it was nice that she brought it up. But she was just so matter of fact. And it was funny because she was like, okay, well, she's like, well, actually, regardless, we're going to do a full STD screening on you anyway, just so we know where we are. This is our first visit. And that was back in like 2000, you know, so it was like really, and she was like, okay, so the nurse is going to come in. There's some paperwork you need to sign to do an HIV test. Cause I can't just run it. You have to authorize it. And I said, okay.
Yep.
So it was really cool. And there are just certain questions that she knew to ask that I'd never been asked before because I had identified as a gay man. So it was actually really nice. I never felt judged or stigmatized. And
yeah, just get asked. So you never felt by any of your doctors?
No.
Okay.
Not that I can recall. I mean, I think before college, I wasn't out to any of my doctors. But since then, because even my current doctor, I believe he's Vietnamese, perhaps, or Cambodian, and he, you know, I believe he's probably not straight himself. So, and he just, you know, because he just came in the office a little too fabulous the first time I met him. I said, oh, girl. That was the first thing
I swishing
thought.
Or?
Damn near. And he had on his little Versace slippers. I think they were Versace. I was like, wait a minute. This child is, they were like slip-ons, but yeah, he was very flamboyant.
Okay.
He was like, okay, so are you heterosexual? Are you bi? Do you have sex with men? Do you identify as gay? And I just looked at him like, oh. I was like, no, I identify as gay or same gender loving. He's like, okay. He's like, well, we'll definitely have to talk about PrEP. And I said, wow, okay, is this what we're doing now?
Already?
Yeah. And I mean, he's definitely been more concerned about diabetes. That's been the immediate concern for him because he's like, I don't like your numbers that much. So we're going to work on this. I've never felt judged. And I think in some regards, it's probably made it easier for him to deal with things that arise because I don't have to explain them. He gets it. So I guess the next question they had here was, do you feel confident in your doctor's ability to help you?
I do.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I like about this doctor is when I go, I don't have to. Now, I haven't. Well, I'll get to that later.
Okay.
When I go, I do not have to wait a long time, like in the waiting room.
Oh, okay.
They're quick. And when I'm in the wait, when I'm actually in the examination room, I do not feel rushed.
That's good.
They take their time. I know that's one of the other questions, but they take their time. So I don't feel like it's a factory where they're just pumping us, getting us in and out really quick because there's more coming or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I never feel that. So I do think, because I'll ask questions, I'll explain things. I mean, I'll explain certain things that I'm going through or something that I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. And he'll explain the good, the bad, and what will happen, what could happen. So I feel totally confident in his ability to help me. And okay. Like I said, the gay part, again, they know it, but it's never been an issue that it's not come up. And this guy, I would say, I think he is younger than me.
Okay.
So
yeah.
To him, I suspect it's not a big deal because our mutual friend, I don't see him going to somebody who would have an issue with, you know, go to a doctor that has an issue with gay people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I.
Mm. Well, and I think the other thing is also that you fall into a low risk category. You know, you're not having multiple partners and the reality is you are married and there tends to be men tend to live better and longer when married. The research has found. Generally, I won't say blanket. It's like there are some unhealthy marriages and relationships out there, but tend to, you know, we tend to eat better, we tend to get more regular sleep, we tend to have a more available sex partner, so we're not engaging in overly risky behaviors. We tend to be more monogamous when married, you know, so on and so forth, which is not a blanket statement, again, because I know lots of gay men who are married and in open marriages and the like. Thruples and, you know, you name it, quintuples. But yeah, it's, there is a trust there. I think definitely the whole prep thing within a minute of him walking in a door was like, oh, wow, okay. And
you aren't ready for that.
Yeah, I was not ready for that. I mean, I know it's a common, I knew it was out there, but the fact that he brought it up, just very matter of fact, like, oh, we need to talk about that and find out whether that's something you'd like to try. And I said, wow, okay, well, yeah, I look forward to that conversation. I'm a little scared of taking something for something that I don't have. And,
yeah,
you know, it's like I do use condoms if I'm, you know, getting into all that. So, yeah, it was just strange. But this past appointment, you know, he snatched my wig because he basically said, he's like, yeah, you can't drink anymore. Because, you know, because he was just doing the basic history and screening. He's like, okay, so have you been smoking? And I was like, no, God, no, you know, I don't do that. He's like, drinking? I'm like, yeah. And then he's like, you know, you shouldn't be drinking, right? And I was like, well, I know that, blah. He's like, you know why? And I said, yeah. He's like, well, that's one reason. But the other one is drug interactions. You do not want to mix alcohol with some of the things you're taking. So I said, oh, okay. So I'm now dry, which really sucks because, you know, my birthday dinner,
you couldn't drink.
Exactly. I'm like, I can't eat, you know, because like normally I have a pretty high drinking tolerance, but as you've probably noticed the last couple of times I've drank, I've been a little tossed, and it's because of drug interactions. So I'm just like, oh, is that what's wrong? I was like, okay, that explains why I'm jacked up after one drink. I don't understand. And then I put a second one on top of it, and I'm like, ooh, I'm toe up. So, yeah, that would be why. He's just like, mm-hmm. He's like, so cut that shit out. I said, okay, it's done. I was like, I'm bitter, but it's done. It's just like, he's like, be bitter all you want. Stop drinking. I said, okay, fine. You know, he's very thorough. So I appreciate that.
So you feel confident in his ability to help you out.
I do. You know, because it's not just pro forma. It feels like he really does give a damn. And then the next question I had here was, do you feel like your questions and concerns are welcomed by your doctor?
Yes, I had, I had answered that, saying that I don't feel, and I answered the next one too, I don't feel rushed. I feel like when I'm in the exam room that, you know, I can say what's going on, I can express my concerns, and I feel like he'll answer them. Mm-hmm. And he'll say, well, he'll get like the pros and the cons of doing this or doing that. So I feel, and this is just like general health stuff.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like my questions, concerns are totally welcomed by him. So do you, with your time, assuming you do with your doctor?
Yeah. I mean, I know he's on a schedule, but I don't feel like I'm herded out. I think at one point I definitely felt like I was part of a cattle drive.
Yeah, I have felt that before with other doctors, but not this one.
Yeah, and I mean, I know he's on a schedule, but I've never felt like I'm not done. Like, I had questions this last time, and I had some things that, you know, were communicated to me by a doctor, my mother's doctor, that I shared with him. And he's like, okay, well, we can definitely look into that. And so I think we've built a pretty good relationship, and his nurse is, she be on me like a thong, child. She just be up in me if I start slipping. So she's the vampire. I go in for occasional blood sugar fasting between A1C draws for my diabetes and all that. So she'll be like, hello. Are you coming in tomorrow? I'm just like, yeah, girl, I'll be there. You know? She's like, remember, don't eat. I'm like, I know, girl, I know. And I'm like, can
That's
you...
a struggle right there, though.
Yeah, you know. Well, it's like an 8-hour fast, but they'd like it to be 12.
I know, but...
You know. Yeah, so, I mean, it's just... So I think this last time, yeah, he wants me to do a TB test. And I'm like, dude, I don't have tuberculosis. But it's just like... He's like, well, when are you? He's like, no, it needs to be less than, it needs to be under 72 hours or, you know, the test was not really. And I was like, okay. And so we still have to get that scheduled. We'll figure it out. But right now, I'm happy with my doctor. It'll be interesting to switch over when my insurance changes, because I suspect it's going to, particularly with all the stuff going on in the wider world and with health coverage. So, yeah. Okay. So I think we had, yeah, so that was the first set of questions. And, you know, they're basically saying if your answers to these questions cause you concern, then it might be time to find a new doctor. I think the best advice we can give you in going through this is if you don't feel right about the service, like, if your doctor snatches your wig over some shit you know you're not supposed to do, that's not a reason to leave them.
They're trying to keep you healthy.
Yeah.
Or get you back to being healthy.
Now, you might have to say to that doctor, like, ouch, that was a little harsh. I don't respond well to that, but I hear you. I need you to come and be like this. And then that's part of building the relationship, because the doctor needs to know, oh, that was too much. They're people. Some of them really do care. Some of them, it's a check. And some of them, it's what they do, but they just don't have the people skills. So you got to let them know how to treat you, how to communicate with you. So, but understand that you have the option to find another doctor and find one that works for you.
Yeah, you shouldn't feel judged, you know, like that first question.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't feel judged based on your race, ethnicity, or sexual behaviors. You should not feel judged by your doctor over that stuff at all. So,
yeah. Because I think looking at, you know, the time that we have remaining in our main topic, I'm wondering if we can maybe talk about just some of the things that we've done to, you know, any advice, any additional advice we have on communicating with your doctors, building a relationship that maybe you weren't caught in this checklist or key questions that you like to ask. Because the rest of the document, which, you know, we'll provide for you on the website and a link to it, it really does get into HIV and really doing a sexual history. And so, you know, your doctor is going to ask you, how many partners have you had? And, you know, who are those folks? What demographic do they fall into? They're going to ask you those questions and they may feel a bit invasive, but I think the key thing that Dark Boy mentioned before is in being asked questions, is the tone of them judging or feel like you're being indicted for something, or does it demonstrate a legitimate concern about your health and well-being?
Just wonder, when you were saying that, I was just wondering, because going back to how a lot of Black men don't trust doctors, I'm just trying to think of something that we could say to get to motivate those guys to go see the doctor, and how do you overcome their distrust? So that's what I was just kind of thinking about. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, we could say all these things, but if they don't have a way of trusting, then I don't know.
Well, I think, and actually that is the juicy piece of steak that we can chew on for a while. Let's focus there. I don't know if there's a silver bullet, but I think certainly as fellow Black men, we need to be more upfront about the fact that, you know, that we go to a doctor, whether it be for our physical health or our mental health. I think it just helps to normalize what's going on with us, you know, and the fact that going to the doctor to get yourself checked out every year does not make you weaker. If anything, it keeps you stronger. You know, there are certain things that we're supposed to have done every year once we hit a certain age. And a lot of men don't do it. I think one of the big ones is the is getting your, what is it? The, not a pap smear, but a rectal exam. You know, where they, the prostate exam. I'm sitting here like, why does Timothy using a tail?
Yeah, that's what I was, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the hard part.
That's the big one.
Yeah.
Now, I know some of the folks out there with bussies, they don't mind. They just, I mean, you know, I know I had to tell my urologist once, like, doc, that is a lot of lube. You do not eat all that. And he just looked at me. I said, what? You know, it's like, I mean, I was.
You said, well, I'm used to taking bigger things than that.
Exactly. I was like, your finger is, it's like not even, you know, I'm like, whatever. I think that's a big barrier. But I think also a lot of times we just don't want to know if there is anything wrong. Ignorance is an unfortunate bliss that some of us are willing to embrace.
Well, you know, at this, and this makes me think of my uncle who lived in the islands, and he started having all these symptoms. He started having all these symptoms of things being wrong, but he wouldn't go to the doctor. He just wouldn't go, and it was only at the urging of other people who basically, like, brother, you don't look right. You don't look good. Mm-hmm. Only then did he basically force himself to go to the doctor, and it turns out he had pancreatic cancer.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's a tough one. That one has a high mortality rate.
Well, and he did not survive. And they were like, if you had come months ago when this started happening, we could have caught it before it went too far. You know, I mean, he did have surgery. You know, he did go through all that. He did go through that. But it was just a matter of waiting too long. And I think he was definitely like the men that we're talking about, where they don't trust the doctors. They don't want to know if something's wrong. And he didn't, he died, let me see, he was 68, didn't make it to 70, you know?
Wow.
And so that's an example of someone who didn't want to go, had something really seriously wrong, and now he's no longer here. So, I mean, I don't know if that scares people into going but it's just that it's that distrust or not wanting to go, or maybe thinking it's not manly to go to the doctor, you know, basically cost him his life. I mean, he could have been here a lot longer. You know, my grandmother, his mom, lived to be 97.
Wow.
So so if he had those genes from her, he could have lived, 20-something more years.
Wow.
So.
Goodness.
So, I mean, I don't know if that changes the tone or anything, but it just, again, he was just told if he had come in a couple of months before, he would have had a better chance. So.
No, and that makes a difference.
Yeah, delaying and not going and waiting till other people are telling you you don't look good, you know. That's not the best thing. I mean, I would say, honestly, one thing I think to probably get people to go, if they're reluctant, I mean, if they have friends, like let's say if I was reluctant to go to the doctor, I was afraid, I didn't trust them, I didn't want to do these things, but if you have a doctor that you like and you trust, I mean, I think friends have to refer friends to doctors, you know, because I would trust it coming from you, you know what I mean, rather than going online or just picking a doctor from somewhere. If you know a friend that's going to a doctor, yeah. I would ask them for a referral. You know.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, and I think it really does come down to this idea of normalizing it. And just the reality of, hey, stuff is going to go wrong with our bodies if we're around long enough. You know, that's just reality. And the more we deny it, the more soft we can be. But I don't know. Strange. That is strange.
And plus, yeah, I mean, I don't know if... Have you ever had that distrust of a doctor? Like not wanting to go to a doctor? Because of the history that's happened before? You know what?
I had one that I really did not care for. And he really, the issue I had with him is that he seemed to think that I did not have a clue as to what I was talking about.
You didn't have what?
I didn't have a clue as to what I was talking about.
Oh.
As it related to my own body, you know. He was, we were talking about, I think, weight loss. And he was like, oh, well, how many calories are you consuming? And I said to him, I was like, you know, I really don't know, but I'm basically eating, you know, I'm like, I have 2 eggs and some yogurt for breakfast, which is, looking at it, probably about maybe 400 calories at the most. I have a salad for lunch. You know, which again, you're just like, and I make my own vinaigrette. So I would give that maybe about 300-400 calories. And then I have stir fry for dinner. So again, you know, you're talking about like a cup or two of stir fry. That's maybe 100 calories, you know. And then I might slice up some chicken breast and throw it in there again, maybe half a breast. So give that another 3. I was like, so I'm basically clocking in at about maybe, I'll say 1,500 calories generously throughout the day. But he basically said that I wasn't losing weight because I wasn't tracking my calories. And I just said, huh? Like, he's like, you know, you're not, he's like, you don't know what you're doing. And I just looked at him like, huh, okay. I just was really kind of thrown off by that. And I just thought it was ridiculous because I'm sitting here like, I am eating an extremely, you know, healthy diet here. And you just gonna sit up there and say, I don't know what I'm talking about. And I, I just remember that I basically totally cut him off. I just stopped going to him. Couldn't do it anymore. It was strange. That's the only doctor I've ever had that I was just like, you're.
That you just had to like, just not trust or not.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think so. You don't know what you're doing, or you're not a good fit for me. But yeah, I think certainly in terms of getting back to our original question of how do we get those men that are maybe hypermasculine or that don't trust doctors or this, you know, they're like, I feel fine. How do we get them to a doctor? And I think part of it is building a community around them of folks that are asking those questions, that are sharing their experiences, that can refer them to a good doctor.
Yeah.
I think actually referring them to a fellow black male doctor would probably go a long way.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, I think it goes a long way because...
Or the black doctors, because, I mean, they're out there.
Oh, yeah, they're out there.
I think they need to do some outreach. I mean, make themselves more known because I think people would trust more if they see another black man as a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it means there are a lot of things that don't have to be said. If a guy is asking you a question, you know, I just remember when I think my first or second appointment with my therapist, he asked me a question. I looked at him like, what you know, I was not ready to answer that question. And I kind of had to say to myself, like, why am I tripping about this question? And I realized that it was a very personal thing, and there was actually probably some shame for me around that question. And I had to really process it and say, you know what? You wanted a black male therapist. You got one.
You got it.
You need to stop. It's like, if you can't be honest in here, it's just like talking to your therapist, talking to your minister. If you can't be honest there, then what the hell are you doing? You haven't chosen well.
Yeah.
You know, you're at your doctor now because a friend of ours referred that doctor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what made me think about that. I'm like, yeah, why not? Why?
Yeah, I mean, if I end up on a PPO plan, you know, which I've done before or something like that, where I have to choose a new doctor because my doctor's not in the network or whatever, the first place I'm going to go is talk to my friends and be like, hey, who you see? You know, my homegirl, she tells me in a minute because she's a doctor. She's like, oh, no, don't mess with her. Mm-mm, you're not going to like her, I already know. You know, so-and-so's a good doc. Yeah, definitely go to them. You know, and it was like my primary, she's like, oh, who's your primary? And I told her, she's like, oh, yeah, she's fabulous. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is if you don't like your doctor, if the nurse is really cool and the nurse gets you, they can be a bridge. They do a lot of that follow-up and a lot of that explaining stuff to you that the doctor just didn't quite do a good job with. The nurses are the ones that make that shit work.
Okay.
You know, so yeah, it's definitely, I would say, you know, if you are someone who has not been to the doctor in the last 6 months, you need to get in there. You need to go in for an annual physical. That needs to be every year. Regardless of your age, you may not do the comprehensive physical every year, but you do a physical exam. If you have a family history of chronic disease or other issues, you need to get screened for that stuff and stay on top of it. Like Dark Boy said, you know, he lost a relative who went in a couple of months too late because he just felt like, oh, it's not necessary to do this. And it's like, yeah, it is. It is the most necessary thing. The thing that connects a lot of us, you know, vis-a-vis this show is our sexuality. It is one of those things. But it's also our ethnicity. It's the cultural bonds. And we have a lot of work to do as a community around our health. From the things that we eat to the stress that we negotiate having this color skin, to the oppression and the, you know, the legacy of slavery, because it's still out there.
It's still there.
You know, post-traumatic slave disorder is a real thing. it's not.
Okay. Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah. Oh, there's a book by, who's the sister? I can't think of her name. She's fabulous, though. Joy DeGruy. She wrote a book called Post-Traumatic Slavery Disorder.
Slave Disorder. Okay.
You know, and it just talks about, like, the mindset that a lot of us have and how we work to overcome that. And generationally, it's falling away. But there are still things that are programmed and encoded into us, whether it be through direct experience or epigenetics passed through our genetic line from our ancestors, the things that they've experienced, they're part of us. I mean, like, the science is showing that now. There's a reason we respond to certain things in certain ways, and you might be like, oh, why am I tripping? It's like, because great-great uncle, auntie, father, mother, so-and-so, 200 years ago, had a great trauma around that. Yeah, that stuff it's real. It's real. We're connected to the past in ways that we don't fully understand. Don't let that, in that legacy of that second and third, fourth class treatment that we endured and survived, continue today.
Yeah, don't do it to yourself by not going to a doctor and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, the world's already out there trying to fuck us over. Don't help it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Don't do it to yourself. 'Cause...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's a debate. I mean, it's not a debate, it's a battle for me personally to manage my diabetes, because it's not just, it's your entire life. It's not just what you eat. It's about your activity level, exercising. It's about managing stress, because that makes your blood sugar go up. It's about getting enough sleep, because that makes your blood sugar go up. Mm. I mean, it's all these things, and it's a very delicate balance. And I can tell you, I am tired. I've been at this shit for 23 years now. I am tired. However, you need a doctor that knows their shit, that understands how to communicate with you, and that you trust to help you get through those periods of, I'm tired of this shit, I don't care anymore, or I know I need to get this checked out, but I'm scared, I don't want to know. A good doctor will help get you through that, as will a good nurse. Especially the nurse.
Yeah.
Nurses have different personalities than a lot of your doctors do. There are some great people out there, there are some doctors out there that are great communicators. They have great interpersonal skills. There are some that know their shit cold, but they do not know how to talk to people.
That's true.
Yeah, and if they're smart, they hire phenomenal nurses that are great communicators.
To be that bridge.
Yeah, I mean, the nurse will bridge that gap. So definitely, I think if you claim to love yourself and care about yourself and think you are a person of value, then you have got to prioritize your physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. Period. So you've got to get in to see a doctor, and you've got to choose the right doctor for you. And don't be afraid to ask questions. They're annoyed when you go on WebMD and then try to tell them they're wrong. But if there's something going on with you, you can do your due diligence. Madam Google, Sister Google, she has lots of information. She will take you places. But ultimately, your doctor is going to know more than you.
Yeah. But I mean, it's always good to say, well, what about this? Or what about, you know, ask questions.
Yeah. I mean, I said to my doctor this week, I said, you know, my mother's doctor suggested that I get tested for this. And he's like, okay, well, we'll definitely do that. He's like, you know, we can do this test. And I said, well, what about this one? And he's like, well, that's the second layer of it. He's like, let's do the first layer, and then we'll do that one if it comes back reactive. And I said, oh, okay. And so, like I said, I knew a little something, but he knew more. <It's> like, and it was a partnership. It was not just him dictating to me. So you have the right to do that as well. Please exercise it. That wraps me for the main topic. How about you, Dark Boy?
Me too.
Okay.
Just get out there, go to the doctor, and find someone you trust and take care of yourself.
Yep, make your appointments and keep them. And look into a plant-based lifestyle. Put more plants in your diet. Even if you still want your steak, put some plants in there. It's better for you. Keep you regular. At the very least. Alrighty, so I guess we are now moving on to a brother needing some help.
Yes.
Who is this brother, and what help does he require?
This week we have Alan. And okay. He's having some, yes. So Alan says, my husband has a friend that I cannot stand.
Oh Lord.
This friend crosses lines all the time. He calls my husband or texts him whenever he wants to. Sometimes when we're at dinner, we're on vacation, he'll call or text. When we're going to bed at night, he's calling or texting. I tell my husband this is disrespectful, but he sees nothing wrong with it. Last night, while watching TV, something on TV, I noticed he was texting this friend while we're watching TV. I was so angry, I finally asked him if there was something going on between the two of them.
Uh-oh.
Well, he blew up at me, we got into this huge argument, and now we're not speaking to each other.
Oh, shit.
I don't know what to do at this point. What would you do if you were in this situation?
Oh, boy. Okay, so
Alan.
Yeah, Alan, this is a toughie because your husband seems to be completely unfazed about this. But this is where I believe your husband is fucking up. This is causing you, his husband, a considerable amount of strain, stress, yes, disappointment.
Unnecessary. Very unnecessary.
Yeah. Like, stress you need to check your boy. And tell him, like, look, these are the times that are all, you know, that are for from my husband and I. Please do not reach out to me unless it is an absolute emergency. And even then, I'm not answering the phone. Send a text. And really, that's, I mean, if you know your friend, so I guess I'm talking to the husband right now. If you know your friend is just one of those insecure bugaboos, then you may have to say, instead of saying to him, don't call me, but just say, this is, you know, this is our private quality time. So, you know, and just
make leave it, us alone.
Yeah, just make it very clear, like, don't call, without saying don't call. But Alan, I would say to you that perhaps your message is not fully getting through to your husband.
Obviously, yeah.
So, and it just seems like you're nagging, or you're coming off maybe as jealous of the friend. So what you may want to do is to put your thoughts down on paper. Now, if you don't, you could put it in a letter. You know, you could do an Aaliyah and send him a full-page letter and seal it with a kiss. Or
I won't move with a kiss, though.
Well, you know. Well, this is going to his husband, not to the friend. Because it's not up to him to check the friend. It's up to his husband. That's his husband's yes. friend, not him. I'm sure they do right. not get along. So, and he said he can't stand him. So I know they're right, not exactly. hanging out. So your husband really needs to be the keeper of that boundary. Your husband is really doing you a disservice here. Big time. And he knows better. He should know better. If he didn't...
Well, he should. I don't...
Yeah, if he doesn't know better, then it's up to you to teach him. And if he doesn't want to learn it, then it might be time to move on. I hate to break up a marriage.
Yeah, because it's not just they're just living together and it's easy to leave and separate. They're married.
Yeah, they're married.
I mean, which is makes it a little more complicated.
Yeah, does he not realize that there are... that you need to have space for the two of you with that is protected, that is guarded, that is yours, that doesn't belong to anyone else? Because I'm pretty sure, I don't know if the husband's friend is like trying to cop block, or he's just like, I was his friend first, you know, and it's like, okay, but sweetie, he now has a husband. So you got to back up. You got to step back. You can't continue to command the space that's no longer yours. I think that's what happens a lot of times with people. You know, when you get into a relationship, you know, you do tend to pull away from your friends and everyone else because you're really invested in this relationship. But
yeah,
at a certain point, you do have to come back up for air, and you have to integrate this person and this relationship into the rest of your life, which involves your family and your friends. And it can be challenging. And it sounds like your husband has failed to do that with this guy.
Yeah. My thing is, Alan, well, I mean, a letter might be a good thing, but he's got to let his husband know you're right, that Alan's husband needs to regulate this somehow. Mm-hmm. It's all, he's the one, I mean, because it makes it seem like he has no special time with the husband because this friend is always calling or texting. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, Alan's husband does have to, you know, block off time and make Alan his priority. Mm-hmm. And not at any time of the day, even on vacation. I mean, when your guys are out to dinner, you're calling and talking to this other person. I mean, I guess the other person must live not in the same city. Otherwise, they'd probably be hanging out together too. But, I mean, yeah, Alan's husband does have to regulate this. And this is a strain. To me, I could not handle, this would be too much for me. Mm-hmm. And I would have to be like, okay, I need to get out of this if there's no change. Yeah. And it sounds, I guess, harsh or whatever to say, well, if this doesn't change, I'm going to leave. But if you're frustrated and you're getting stressed out, and there's no time where this friend is not butting in somehow, it sounds like. That would get really old really quick. Really old really quick.
And I feel like it's intentional on some level, where he's competing for your husband's affections, trying to make sure that he doesn't get left. And either the friend is rapidly insecure to the point of being a fatal attraction without the sexual component, you don't mention anything like that, so I just assume that this person is just very emotionally dependent upon your husband. But I think also the other key element is that your husband's not really, he's not putting you first.
Yeah.
I don't think your request is unreasonable. You're not saying to him, you can't hang out with this guy anymore. You're just saying, look, I need him to not call at his house. I need him to not be texting you all hours of the night. I need him to respect me and our relationship. And that doesn't seem to be happening right now. Yeah, so I think going back to the letter, Alan, if your thoughts are somehow getting a little confused or you get very emotional when discussing this with your husband, write your thoughts down on paper and carefully walk through each of them with him so you don't get off track per se, or you're always able to come back to it like, okay, so my third issue is, and then you can discuss it, and then you're like, okay, my fourth issue is, you know, and you're able to communicate everything you're feeling. Because to him, it may seem kind of trivial, like you're just overreacting, you're doing too much. But for you, it's a big deal. You're like, this hoe is all up on my man, and I don't like it. So if that is what's happening, then you have every right to bring this to your husband. And if he's going to choose someone else over you, then that means your marriage is in trouble. And it's not to say that he's supposed to be yours isolated from everyone else. That's not what you're asking for. You're basically saying, hey, after 8 p.m., I don't want that bitch calling here because I'm trying to snuggle and cuddle with you and have a conversation, and this hell is always calling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you may want to pose the question about, you know, is there a history with you two that I'm not aware of? Is there unrequited stuff going on? Because you need to talk to him about that. Because he is acting like he's the other man.
Yeah, so I don't blame Alan for thinking that, well, is there something going on? But there may have been something going on previously, maybe even before their relationship, that, you know, may be leading to this. So, yeah, that's a good question to ask.
Yeah, I don't know, but I don't really have anything else for Alan. It just seems really sticky and messy. Your husband has to step up. You've done what you can short of walking away or cutting a bitch, you know? You can always cut a bitch.
Yeah.
But that's only going to make things worse.
Yeah, and part of what I was going to say is, well, then Alan, you know, Alan needs to... I mean, I would say needs to, but does Alan, you know, do you have friends that you're texting, that you're calling, that you can hang out with and maybe have some time away from your husband while this is going on? I mean, that could potentially go either way, whereas like he realizes, okay, well, I'm losing this one. Or he might get pissed off that now you're not there as much, but I don't know.
Wow.
But yeah, that could go either way. So
this would be a good opportunity for nonviolent communication. Look up Rosenberg. But it's like, I think I've mentioned it before on the show. The template is when I observe a behavior. So it could be when I see you do this or when I hear you say this, I feel this way. I am asking you to blank. And you can basically present all your grievances using that format. Just do them one by one. And, you know, make him repeat it back to you. Be like, what did you hear me say? Okay. So you can go on to the next one. Okay. When your phone rings, like when we are cuddling into bed watching television at night and your phone rings and you let go of me to answer it, you know, because he has his own ringtone, so you know it's him. I feel like I am second, third, fourth in line, and I should feel like I'm first in line. For your energies. You know, whatever it is. So I'm going to ask you to blank. Because if you guys blew up like this, clearly the communication broke down. Because you have a legitimate gripe here. So you may want to try a different way of communicating this news to him. Because he may be as frustrated as you are, but he's just taking a very different outward facade about it. He's not showing his anger. He's not showing his exasperation. He's not showing that he's tired of hell as his friend, as you are. He's just kind of rolling with it and trying to be the Rock. Trying to be your man. But your man needs to understand he's fucking up.
Right.
Let him know. I appreciate you. I appreciate the effort you have made. It is not supporting me in a way that's consistent with our wedding vows. I don't feel loved here. So I'm going to need you to do something else. You know, there are lots of ways to communicate that. Yeah. Lots of ways.
All right.
Yeah, but
that was all I had for him.
Yeah, good luck to you, Alan. We'd love a follow-up.
Yeah.
Hopefully you guys are able to reconnect soon. And I would actually make an appointment to talk with the husband. Just say, you know, I'd like to have dinner tomorrow night and talk about, you know, what's going on between us.
And both of your phones are off.
Yes, turn both them bitches them. Off.
Off.
Actually, you may just want to have a rule where the phones are not on. And, like, get a landline for the house. And if you have, like, you know, aging parents, family emergencies that might emerge, give them that number. Turn your cell phones off or leave them in the living room when you guys are in bed. And that way, if someone really needs to reach you, they can. But even family knows, don't call that number unless you're on the way to the hospital. Think about ways, about what it is you want, and take the steps to get there. But that's all I got for Alan.
All right, me too.
it's like, I think that's all I got for him. So, yes. Yeah.
So mm-hmm. Anyone who wants to write a letter for Ask Your Besta, or help a brother out, go ahead and send your email to sexualhealingpod@gmail.com. We may just read your letter over on the show. You could be anonymous too. No worries there. And that's it. I think you got our social media contacts.
I do have a few social media outposts that I can reference. The first and our most active is Twitter. You can reach us for the show at PodSexual. It says PodSexual. You can also reach me at Dr. Pookie. Dark Boy is not a big Twitter file, but you can reach him. you know, you can email us at sexualhealingpod@gmail, and that'll get to him. But yeah, if you have something for Dark Boy specifically, email is best. I tend to be our social media presence for now. I'm waiting on a grand vacation from Dark Boy where he can jump in there and pick up some of those things. But for now, it's me.
It's a struggle.
Yeah, the struggle stays real. We are on Instagram. We're stunting on the gram at Sexual Healing Pod. And we are on Facebook under Sexual Healing from top to bottom. And yeah, those are our outfits. We are proud members of the Pods by QPOC Network. And that is a .com as well as a hashtag. So if you want to find some interesting content by queer identified people of color that in the podcasting universe, check out podsbyqpoc.com, access the directory there, or you can just do a search for the hashtag, because a lot of us do post our episodes in the Twitterverse and beyond with that hashtag. So lots of really fascinating shows out there to check out. So we invite you to do that. And you know what? Yeah. Last episode, I don't think we signed off with our normal phrases.
No, we didn't.
So we had to remember to do that this time. But yeah. So that is all I have. I believe I've talked enough for today.
Me too.
Alrighty. So y'all be good out there. Be a blessing in the world, not a curse.
Yep. Be good to yourselves and everybody else.
Most definitely. Self-care, y'all. Episode 16, I believe, called Love Yourself. Self-care is huge. Gentlemen, go back and review that episode again. We talk about the eight dimensions of self-care, and one of them is the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, the financial, all those wonderful parts of you, including the little boy within, the whimsy. Check it out. All right. So on behalf of my road dog, Dark Boy.
Yes.
We are going to get on our cycle and roll up out of here. Have a happy hump day. If your hump mm-hmm. is going down today, make sure there's some latex involved.
Right.
With a nice layer of prep if that's your thing. All righty. Take care, y'all.
All right.
All right.
Till next time.